Hey, good evening, everyone. John Henry Soto here, along with George Batista. Welcome to Counterparts. This is the show where we Counterparts, by the way, just so people know, it actually means that one that closely resembles another. So a lot of things here kind of bleed into one another. And so that's why we love this show and we love to bring it to you every week. And so I just wanted to throw that out there. Sorry, George. I thought it'd be a good time in the beginning to kind of bring that up.
I thought you were going to say you and I closely resemble each other.
No, that's for sure. I don't know how we're related. There's something happened there. Someone stepped out of line. Anyway, we have William Wayne, filmmaker, is going to be on the show this evening. We're very excited to talk to him about his new film, Los Angeles. It's really, really exciting. And we have a lot in common, and you're going to find out today, tonight. So please stay tuned. All right. Welcome. Welcome. As I said, William Wayne is on the show, filmmaker, director. We're very excited to have him on. We'll be talking so much about his new film and filmmaking and film industry and everything film. It's going to be awesome. But first, we do have a sponsor that we want to give some love to. So please, George, take it away.
Thank you, sir. As always, the Counterpart Show is brought to you by Wellness Resources, a family-owned and operated nutritional supplement company providing the highest quality clinically formulated supplements since 1985. Find out why Wellness Resources supplements are the top choice of health-conscious individuals around the world. Make sure you go to myvitaminresource.com and check out all their supplements, which are fantastic. If you enter the promo code Counterparts, you will get free shipping on your order. And for February, they have a new promotion because it is Heart Health Month. You get 25% off all of their cardiovascular supplements for February. So make sure you check that out. All right. So let's talk a little bit about our exciting guest today. As John said, we have actor-director William Wayne. And William was born in Chicago. He studied acting at the University of Washington. And after graduation, acted in theater as well as several indie films and features, including an official selection to the 2005 Tribeca Film Festival. His first directing project was the award-winning documentary short film Honor Flight. His directorial feature film is entitled Lost Angeles, a psychological thriller which opened theatrically in 2019 and can currently be seen on Amazon Prime Video. The film garnered William two awards for Best Actor and Best Indie Film, made for under $100,000 at Film Threat's award show. William continues to work directing and editing commercials for advertising campaigns, and we are absolutely excited and honored to have him on the show. So, ladies and gentlemen, let us welcome Mr. William Wayne.
Thank you.
All right.
Great introduction. Thank you, George. Thank you.
Absolutely. Only the best.
Thank you so much for being on. We really appreciate you taking the time to spend with us and to talk about the industry and your journey. And George has some questions for you. As I always say, George is a little bit more prepared. He writes things down. I kind of like to just write notes and then listen and see if there's something there.
Being organized.
Free flow. So we're gonna just get started here. Thank you so much. I'm gonna ask George to give you the first question, and then we're gonna rock and roll. And anybody out there that's listening, if you have a question for William, please drop it right there in the comment section, and we'll put it up on the screen if it's appropriate, obviously.
Yeah,
or maybe if it's not, maybe it'll be.
People can like call in or not call in, but like message in.
Good. Yeah,
they can chat. Yep, we can chat with them.
Cool.
Absolutely. So,
all right.
So William, so again, thank you so much for coming on. I know one of the things I found out about you is that you actually like the classics.
Oh, I do.
You're actually, yeah, you're into the, you know, the, a lot of those films. I know Jimmy Stewart was a big influence on you as well. A lot of those actors from, and John as well. He loves Jimmy Stewart as well. So, you know, one of the things I wanted to know about you was, as far as filmmaking, did you, you know, was most of your inspiration from those type of films, or was it more with films that you grew up with specifically?
That's a great question. I think I only realized actually when I was going into filmmaking how much I really love the classics. And it's interesting you said Jimmy Stewart, because I don't know how you knew that, but that was, you know, I love him in Vertigo, that actually, and the film noir. I started to kind of in doing film, right, and being a filmmaker as opposed to just acting, right, where you're doing different roles and they're kind of, it's the director's piece, right? But in filmmaking, especially when you're writing a script, and you kind of have to write what you love and what you know. And so film noir, I realized, I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't even realize I had over the years rented, right, videos and DVDs and you know, online of like all the classics of Gilda, Out of the Past, you know, Vertigo, all these older movies from and you know, I guess that would be my the style or the genre that I didn't even realize that I loved. And so it was just very natural for me to kind of flow into that. Although I didn't know that growing up, you know, acting, I did like the classic actors, because we lived in on an army base in Germany for a few years, and we pretty much watched the movies that my parents wanted to watch. So they'd watch like classic movies. I wasn't watching like, you know, modern day movies. I didn't have the culture. So we would watch, and there was only one TV station, which was like AFN, that spoke English. So at the time, so I pretty much just watched all these classic movies. And so occasionally we would get like we'd rent like a movie that was not really my parents' type, right? But like it'd be like an old classic, and so I'd see like The Warriors, or you know, or Streets of Fire, like that, you know. And I'm like, who's Walter Hill? Like, this is right. And then I'm like, oh, he did 48 Hours too, you know. So it was kind of so that's kind of how it started. I actually, now that I think about it, because when I was living on a farm outside of Chicago, I didn't really watch many movies. It was really when we moved to Germany, and then the free time, you could either watch like German stations or you could rent, you know, movies. And so we rented, I think my mom's catalog of like her top movies. And we watched a lot of musicals because she loved like she liked American Graffiti, which is kind of a musical, but she also liked, you know, Singing in the Rain and all those movies too. So.
Yeah. Nice. That's awesome. Isn't it interesting that, you know, like when you're young and you're gravitated toward, you know, you gravitate towards a certain thing, you don't realize that you're kind of building this future. You're building this repertoire of information that you're going to utilize later, and you have no idea. And then you look back and you're like, man, I'm so happy that I fell into that, you know, because my grandpa was the same. My grandpa would put on these, I was raised by my grandparents mainly, and my grandpa would put on these old films. You know, I watched The Lone Ranger and Three Stooges and Marx Brothers and all that. And it didn't, you know, you show a black and white film now to a young person and they're like, oh, it's a black and white film. And my kids, you know, they're kind of getting better at it now, but they generally don't want to see a black and white. But for me, it never really, because I always watched these old, even though that we had color TV, but it was a wonderful opportunity that was given to me, and that you know, you just learn to embrace it.
I cannot agree more. Luckily, we were there at the time when I did want to watch what they were watching, right? Yeah, I did want to watch. My dad's like, well, let's check out From Here to Eternity. And I'm like, oh, what's that about? And it's black and white. And I think I probably was like, oh, it's black and white. But then I was like excited to be watching a movie with them.
Yeah,
and
that's cool.
Right.
So, you know, a few years later, maybe I would have been like, black and white, I don't want to see it. But I was at the right age, you know?
Right.
Where you still want to hang with your folks and learn, you know, from your folks. So,
exactly.
Yeah. But that's so true. I never thought like my wildest dreams would have been like, oh, I'm going to go pursue acting. I'm going to go pursue filmmaking. That was like the last thing on my mind.
Yeah. And you're getting all these journeys, you know, like when you're watching a film and you're seeing these arcs and you're in these fantasy worlds, yeah. You know, your mind as a child, you absorb those and you kind of start thinking. And when you get old enough, you're like, I wonder if I can tell a story, you know? And I love it.
Yeah, so true. So true. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, I definitely only thought I was interested in acting, but then little things happen in your life that kind of push you and nudge you along. And then the next thing I know, I just was shooting short films, you know, and taking classes to learn filmmaking, you know, because up until that time, I was only learning and concentrating on acting, just like trying to stay focused so I didn't get distracted on other things.
You know? Right.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because, you know, you watch those movies with your parents. And it's funny because my mother, when I was a kid, would watch all these black and white movies. She loved black. She had this all the VHSs of all these movies and stuff. And I was never interested. But the one thing that actually I got interested was when I had film class in high school.
Oh, wow.
And I started seeing Angels with Dirty Faces and then Psycho and all these things where they started breaking those films down. Yes. And I was like, holy cow. Yeah. These are things that I did. And then from that point on, I started to watch the classics more because you get this appreciation that, you know, I didn't know. My mother really didn't know too much. She just was film was a film.
Right. But
when sometimes when you get a film class like that and it breaks it down, I was like, I couldn't believe that there was so much involved in filmmaking. And that was kind of my introduction to old films and filmmaking in general.
That's great. That's a great story. You know what? That's true, George. Cause like sometimes my parents would tell me they were like the TCM of like, you know, like they would do a little intro for me because I don't know about this movie. And she'd be like, let me tell you the story about Ben-Hur and how this was made and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And so
right.
I'm like, okay. Yeah. Like, so I was getting these little introductions from her. But, you know, that's what's great now is that they have all these, like, you know, intros, right, of people that were filmmakers talking about it. So you can almost watch all these on YouTube.
Right.
And so I was watching one of your podcasts where you're talking about social media. And I was like, gosh, I'm not really so much on social media, but I am on YouTube looking at all these interviews, right, of all these filmmakers and how these films were made or the world at that time,
right,
which brought you to that film or why that film resonated because, you know, it was right after World War II or, you know, Casablanca was actually written right before the war or before America got into the war.
Right.
And then it came out right after we were in the war. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, and so some of these films kind of to hear that back, you know, story is interesting, fascinating.
The film really comes with, you know, when they call it a period piece or some, you know, it really is, it doesn't have that time, that moment in time is captured, not only what we see on the screen, but everything that was behind the scenes, everything that was currently happening in the news, the director's emotional state because of what's currently happening. So there's so much going on that when you really break down a film like George mentioned, Psycho, you can have a whole series just breaking down that film because that film has so many moving parts.
Oh, yes.
And so many challenges that he went through, you know, or Apocalypse Now or The Godfather.
Films that are documentary is pretty fascinating too on the Apocalypse Now, huh?
Oh man, that thing is like I don't even know how they made it.
I know.
You look at it now, you're like, how did they even get through that? Everybody was bitten and almost
I was just talking to my actor from Los Angeles, John Jacobs, and he plays the antagonist in the movie, Walt Warshaw. And we were talking about a scene that he did, which when I was talking to him about it in pre-production, I was like, well, this is kind of like the Apocalypse Now scene where, you know, Martin Sheen, you know, is in the mirror and he's looking at himself in the mirror and he kind of goes wild and he punches the mirror and this and this. And I could see him, and John is British originally, and I could see him just like really kind of getting into it, you know, and thinking. And I thought like, you know, he says, you know, I'm kind of method in my approach, but, you know, then he says it with a British accent and you're like, okay, but he's really a British actor, right?
Right.
Instead of like running around the location and then they're supposed to be out of breath, they just acted, right? So that's what he's going to do anyways. Right. And then we get to this kind of grandiose scene, and he's at the top of the stairs, and you know, one of my assistants, production assistants, comes to me and she goes, "Yeah, John was wondering if I could go to the store to get Jameson for him." And I was like, "Jameson, what, yes, you know." In the scene,
wow, I wrote, really method, huh?
Yeah, in the scene, I wrote down that the character was completely drunk, and he was crying, and he was having a mental breakdown, you know, and, you know, and John had acted in so many films. Like, I was just like, you know, trying to like get him to say yes to this thing, you know? Oh, and that's actually why we even talked about it, because I saw this old email from him, and it was this great little email. And it says, "Hey, yes, you know, I read your script and I'm interested to take this leap of faith and journey with you, you know, on this ambitious project." And so I was like, "Hey, I found this old email," and you know, this, and I read it to him. It was kind of fun, you know.
Oh, that's so
and,
cool.
And to think, like, at that time, that was back in 2013 or 14, right? To think that we got to this point was like, you know, just kind of like, it kind of blew my mind on that, you know. Isn't so anyways, we're there on the scene, and then my cinematographer was Anna Maria Manso. And also Eric Bodowns was another cinematographer, but for these scenes, it was Anna Maria Manso. And she says, "I think he's drunk." And I'm like, "He's not drunk. I tell you what he's doing. He's doing an old acting technique. He's grabbing his cup of whiskey, swashing it around in his mouth and probably spitting it out." And right. She was like, "No, he's drunk." So, I clarified this with John before I said, "Hey, I might tell the story someday." He's like, "Go ahead, I don't care."
Yeah. He's like, "I don't care."
Yeah. So what happened is he really was drunk, and so he didn't really realize that we had mic'd him, and I don't think I had brought a boom, because you know it was a very small production, you know, and so he throws his robe off in the scene. But there goes his microphone to the ground. Oh, so then at this point, now I'm acting it. So now I'm like, I'm going to go into the scene a little sooner than I was supposed to. So I go up there, try to put the robe on him. He throws it back off. And then we kind of do a cut. And I'm like, "Hey, we need your robe on for this scene." He goes, "William," or no, he was calling me Jake throughout. Right. and at this point, I'm starting to realize when he said he was really method, he really was method. He wasn't so much the British, you know, Laurence Olivier type of actor, right? He's like Jake, right? Which is my character's name. "Jake, there is no microphone. There's no cameras. Get these cameras out of my face," you know?
Wow. And I'm,
you know, so he really went dark and method. And then afterwards, when I said, "Hey, listen, you know, we got to have you do the ADR." He's like, "ADR, what?" You know, because the microphone was on the ground. But he did give us that kind of Martin Sheen, right? Going really just dark into this world, right? And he went all out. The only difference was in the Martin Sheen scene, he had no dialogue. And in our scene, he had like a freaking The irony is he said every word, not necessarily in the correct order, but he said every word, which I was like watching every take. And I'm like, no way. He said, again, he went through the whole monologue. Right.
That's amazing.
So the next time I work with John, I think I might say his character is a recovering alcoholic, does not drink at a drop.
I want to talk also about the film as well, but I wanted to ask you a question because you mentioned the method and you know the British style, and you mentioned the story of the running with the Dustin Hoffman and the
Marathon Man story.
Yeah. And so when you're directing and as an actor and you're directing actors, you know, that's always such a interesting thing because you're sort of like you're there as the actor, but you're also there as a director. So now you have to also kind of bring either ask for more or less or change the beats around or whatever.
Yeah.
But when you're dealing with the method, act with the different types of technique,
right?
Is that do you actually see that a lot? Is that something that you actually have to think
with? Yeah, absolutely. You know, I relied a lot on Anna Maria Manso, who was a cinematographer, and Eric Bodowns, because although I had you know, jumped into the screenplay, and I was taking classes for screenplay and writing, and I was taking filmmaking classes. My knowledge on acting, right, as just far as knowledge goes, because I was studying with like some of these really great acting teachers, right, in Los Angeles at the time, and then I studied at the UW. So whether or not I was a good actor is, you know, that's a different story, but I was studying with really good teachers, right? And so I kind of knew, like, and then the different methods, like I studied like Strasberg up in Seattle, right? And then I studied with Meisner, a teacher who studied with Meisner, just not obviously not Strasberg, but a student of Strasberg. And then, so I was aware of the different methods, and then the UW had their own method that was more, it was a different, like altogether. So that was my easiest part of directing. The very easiest was working with the actors, right? And that was so if I wasn't really sure about a scene, and the cinematographer was like, okay, well what did you want here in this first shot? And I what I would realize is, and this is what I did later, right, after I got the flow of directing a feature, right, is I would go to the actors and we would rehearse the scene, and then which I should have been doing from the beginning, you know, but my lack of understanding, I think, as a film director at the time. So we'd rehearse the scene, we'd find out where they were going to go, and then if they had any changes to make or whatever, that was no problem, right? You know, and so, for instance, I had this great actor, John Cappadici, who I met at the Newport Beach Film Festival a long time ago. And I kind of asked him, hey, you know, he needed a ride back. And I was going to be acting in this feature film of this director. And he had just acted in that director's short film. And so the director came up to me. He's like, hey, can you drive John Cappadici back? And I'm like, sure. And I had this small little RX-7, and he's like 6'3 or 6'4. And I'm like, really? He's like, I used to have a 280ZX. It'll be fine. And so on the drive back from Newport Beach Film Festival, we got a chance to talk. And then he kind of... like I would always call him up and say, hey, I have this big audition. Can you, you know, coach me through it? And so he kind of became a mentor. So when the script, I brought him the script. He goes, you wrote a script? Okay, well, let's have a table read. So he brought all these actors for a table read. Nice. And then in a different project, I did a table read with David Provol and from The Sopranos in Mean Streets.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he says, who did you want to play, like, you know, Angela's dad here? And I said, well, I kind of wrote an email to David Provol, but he, you know, I didn't hear back. And I feel like, you know, there were so many people on that table read. He probably, you know, didn't know who I was. I don't know if he read it or whatever. He goes, no problem. Let me give him a call. So he calls up David Provol. He goes, hey, this kid I coach, he wrote the screenplay. I think he sent you an email. Take a look at it, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, probably within like 15 minutes later, he's like, okay, he's going to do it. He's going to do it. He's going to do it. So, So that's kind of, I don't know if that, you know,
that is like, I love that.
Yeah. And that just kind of helps elevate the project. So
yeah.
Then when I went to John Jacobs and then I met Karina Rico, we had a mutual friend, but I didn't really know that at the time. And so when she auditioned, I think it always helps, you know, it's like, okay, we have these veteran actors. We had that by this point, John Cappadici talked to John Aprea, who was in Godfather 2. He played young Tessio. So we had him in the movie. We had David Provol from Mean Streets and The Sopranos, right? He was the main antagonist in season 2 of The Sopranos, right? Richie Aprile. And so, you know, it kind of brought some credibility to, you know, the fact that I didn't have the filmmaking credits at the time.
Yeah. So. Wow. That's awesome. You know,
yeah, so I loved directing those actors. It was a dream. Right. And John Cappadici, so go back to your question. John Cappadici brought it every take.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, David Provol brought it every take. And the younger actors, they brought it, but you could see that we were working our way. And I include myself in there because I'm, you know, completely not of the veteran actors there, you know.
Yeah.
But they brought it every take. And the younger actors did. But you could see we were working our way to bring it, you know?
Right.
But it was fantastic. I mean, like Karina's performance, John Jacobs' performance, I just loved their performances. It was a dream.
Yeah. And having those veteran actors like that on set also elevates everyone else's
Definitely.
Yes.
You know, you're just suddenly, you become better. You're like, you know, because of just the energy that they bring and that confidence that they bring. And, you know, just the not so much because, you know, by that time, technique is already, you know, technique is already done.
Yeah.
You know,
like,
you have a style, you have a way, and there's always a technique, but it's so well grooved in.
Yeah. You know, they're not really trying to like launch into their technique. You know, right, they just pick up the script and they're like, you know, boom, 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 hitting every moment as they go down through the script. And they're like, okay, you know, and they'll do it on the first take. So, you know, I always shoot a rehearsal. And that's one thing I always do is I film the rehearsal, even if I don't use it, because I know that those guys are going to be on.
You know? Right.
And you might capture something really nice. You know? Yeah. So I always say, okay, we're going to do one rehearsal and then we're going to do the take. And they're like, okay, you know. Wow. So, but yeah, they bring it. It was so fun to watch them. It was such a great learning experience, you know. And the learning experience, even if I didn't really see it on the when I was there on the set, in the editing room, I'm just like, wow, you know, every take, these guys are just on, you know. And I had Charlotte Lewis, who is in The Golden Child with Eddie Murphy, right?
She was, oh, wow.
And then they brought it every take, you know, and Karina Rico, who is, plays Angela, the main character, she just was like so endearing in the movie, you know, and because I was kind of wondering, I'm like, you know, when we cast this, she was the last person cast. And I was like, when we cast this, I kind of need an actress that's going to be likable because she does some things where you're supposed to be rooting for her, but she does some questionable things.
Sure.
But she was... when she auditioned, everybody's like, okay, we found her. And we were already filming too. So I took off a day of filming and we didn't have the main star of the movie. Because, you know, we had to hit this launch because everyone reserved around their time, right? And so we filmed, I think, 2 weeks and I hadn't found the right actress. We'd been auditioning nonstop. Wow. And then Karina was the last person that came in that day. And I didn't really think she was going to be as good as she was because at that time she had done one film, but she didn't. That was like, I think the majority of her credits was just this one film, which she starred in, but I didn't know anything about it. She didn't really have a demo reel from it yet. So, and we had a lot of like, so it was fantastic. So she was fantastic. John, I was just so proud of the whole cast. Oh my gosh.
That's such a great thing to hear because there's so many independent filmmakers out there that are struggling trying to put teams together, you know, and that's really one of the challenges because, you know, there's so many moving parts in making a film. It's not when you write a script, man, and you start that process. It's sort of like you're looking at Mount Everest and you're like, how am I ever going to even get this done? But when you have energy, you have positive energy towards that, you're going to pull in the right people. And everything that you mentioned was exactly what happens. And you hear all these stories. I love watching documentaries of filmmakers and how they, we just talked about on YouTube and all the story behind the projects. That's the story, what you just said, you know, it's like, and then I'm driving. Oh yeah, I'll drive him back. And then he makes a phone call. And you know what I mean? It's like, just going with it and letting the universe kind of give you the opportunities and you being bold enough and confident enough to take it.
Yes.
You know? Exactly. Yeah. It's the saying, yes, right. I'm a young filmmaker and yes, let's do it. You know, and it's interesting because I'm pretty sure when you win the awards and you're like, wow, I actually got to that point where I'm winning the awards. You're looking back and seeing all these things that had to happen and come together, like John said, energetically for it to get to this point.
Yes.
You know, it's got to be an unbelievable feeling.
Yeah.
You know, oh my God. You know, it was, I had, you know, and I relied on so many people. And it's a good point you said about the crew. You know, I relied on so many people. I was, you know, obviously I studied acting and then I wanted to write a piece and I didn't know I wanted to direct it. And then I ended up producing some projects, just short films. And then I started taking filmmaking classes at Glendale Community College in Pasadena and at LACC. And I was just taking filmmaking classes, right? Which are relatively cheap to take, you know? And it's not like you're spending like 40 grand or whatever it costs to go to some of these private filmmaking schools, right?
Yeah.
Right.
I'm maybe spending $100 to go to a class, right?
Yeah.
And so, and I'd be bartending and learning more filmmaking and learning and learning. And then what happened is you have all these projects to do. So, and because I was taking, I had to take a producing class because they didn't have producing classes at the other ones. So I took producing at LACC. And then I took at Glendale, I was taking a lot of filmmaking classes because PCC was really hard to get into. Pasadena College was really hard to get into these filmmaking classes because they were always overbooked. And so what happened is that I was making friends at all these places, and those students ended up becoming my crew.
Wow. Right?
Which is why we had to shoot it at the time we did, because it was right before school started again.
Okay.
Right. Okay. Right?
And then I didn't have Angela. And I was like, oh, man, maybe next year. And then Anna Maria Mansell was like, no, we have to do it now. And so I was like, okay.
Wow.
Yeah, because I was getting cold feet, actually. I was like, I have Angela. There's some things I could fix on the script. And then she's like, I think it's now or never. So I launched into it. You know?
That's great that you were, that you had someone like that, that can, because it's so easy for someone to say like, okay, yeah, let's go next year.
Yeah.
You know, and then suddenly everyone feels good.
At the last hour, I was like, maybe I better pull the plug on this before we launch in. We don't have Angela. Are we ever going to find our Angela, you know?
Right.
And so we just did, like, it was literally a leap of faith that way too. And then in the editing room, you know, when I, you know, had the stuff, we had like a lot of good friends, right? And I had, I met a lot of more friends that would help me in the editing process, because some of the technical stuff was very difficult, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was kind of, overwhelming at some points, you know? But then you just keep going. What you do is you compartmentalize, I suppose, right? Because then if you're thinking about like this whole script, the whole script is no good. It doesn't work, you know? And then you just compartmentalize and you try to make one work. And, oh, this kind of goes to your question there, George, you know, about film festivals and awards, right? Is that, so, you know, because I had a good 2 week, 3 week period where I was filming in like 2013 or and then I was bartending because I kind of like used my budget and I had to keep bartending in 2014, 15.
Sure.
And then in 2016, and I was editing, I shot some more stuff and then edited together and submitted it to these festivals, and we didn't get in any. And it was none. We didn't get in any festivals. And so I kind of knew that there was a couple scenes that really could really help elevate it. And I had kind of used all my resources and from people around to help me make the story better, but it wasn't really getting to that next level. Right. So what we did was we shot these, like, luckily we were able to shoot these scenes, and then I implemented it. And then I submitted again, and we didn't get in to any festivals.
No.
Right? But one festival, but, you know, and there was one festival that was really good, and they gave me some pointers, two actually festivals. One of them was Dances with Films, gave me some pointers. And they said, we really like your film. It's not going to make it in our festival this year, but we just want to commend you on this and this and this. And we thought, if you want any pointers, we thought maybe this and this and this can be improved. So I'm doing those things, you know.
Wow, that's really nice of them to do that.
Isn't it? Yeah. And so I'm like, thank you very much. You know, maybe next year, you know, I'll resubmit it. And they're like, yeah, you know, just resubmit it next year. And then the Method Fest said to me, you know, you need to cut about 15 minutes. And so did a couple other people around that time. And I started having screenings. So I started to see when people started to squirm, right? And we were having screenings at my friend's place. So he would have it on his, like, thing. And random people that didn't know me, right, through his friend were coming in to watch it that didn't know me. And he'd have, like, a little party. It was actually John Jacobs, my bad guy. So he'd have a little party. You know, he'd give them some cocktails. He's like, you know, let's have them drink a few so that they'll get through the whole film. You know, it's a little long, William. And so, you know, and then I'd notice, like, you know, at 20 minutes in, they start squirming. And so I'd make cuts. And then about like 30 minutes in, they start squirming around. And then, you know, once I got past the part of 45 minutes, John and I started to feel better about it.
Yeah.
And So that's, yeah. So, but it's so tough to watch a film when it's too long and the audience is squirming and they're like kind of looking at their watch. It's like, it's a feeling. And I remember I got up and I went out of the room and I was just like, and John's already there drinking his drink. He's like, it's too long, isn't it? And I was just like, it's too long. It's way too, I'm cutting 15 minutes tonight, yeah. You know? And then I resubmitted and I did get these great notes also from Don Franken at the Method Fest. And I says, hey, can I resubmit? But they only had like 4 more days till they were announcing. So I cut 15 minutes and I resubmitted, right? And I used all these notes that I had compiled and I cut like 15, 16 minutes of the film and I made it 88 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I resubmitted and we got in.
Wow, that's so.
All-nighters, and my work was like, "What's he doing? He's not coming into work. He keeps giving someone to sub in, the bartend for him. What's he?" And they're like, "Are you in this festival?" I'm like, "I'm not in this festival, but you know, I think it might be one of those things which is now or never." And so right. After that time, I didn't change a thing after that.
You know? Right. Yeah. Isn't that the lesson, though, if you think about it? That's that whole story right there. That's the lesson, because you could have gotten frustrated.
Oh,
you could have said, oh, you know, you could have stopped at any point. And the questions you asked yourself were, okay, how can I fix this? How can I make this better? And then getting the feedback and actually accepting the help. Because a lot of people will say, no, I want to do it this way. But you actually, again, said, yes, I'll accept this help, make this better. And sure enough,
you took the notes.
It pushes you forward, right?
So true. What I found is that they had, you know, John's friend was bringing in people that were, some of them were filmmakers, some of them were not. And maybe I would have reacted differently if I wasn't seeing them fidget in their chair.
Right.
But luckily, Dances with Films sent me great notes. Don Franken of the Method Fest sent me wonderful notes. And then I was at the point where I'm like, I'm willing to do whatever they say. Okay. Okay. We're going to cut this. And unfortunately I did cut a couple, you know, actors out that they did really, really well. And so I'm definitely going to be asking them to be my next one, you know, because I did cut 15 minutes, you know? And so that was the only downside. I was trying to keep everything in, but you know, if you keep everything in, sometimes the whole thing sinks. Unfortunately, right.
Yes. Right?
Well, that's why.
And it's not because of the performances, it's because the story, when you're writing it, makes sense, but then you're watching it and you're like, oh, this story goes lateral, right? Mm-hmm. You don't need it to keep going forward.
Right. And I think also when you're writing, you know, sometimes characters show up and, you know, I'm sure it happens to you when you're writing a character and the character wants to say something different than what you want them to say.
Yeah.
It's kind of going off the rails a little bit. And you're like, why are you acting this way? I'm trying to get you. The point is this, you know, and then you put it, but you want to have them in there. So you put them in there. And then that's sometimes when those characters kind of, but to your credit, man, you know, I know so many filmmakers or even musicians that just stop.
Yeah. Right.
They get frustrated and they stop. But you took the notes.
Right.
Yes. And this is the part that really, you know, anyone listening right now, you're a filmmaker, if you're an actor, if you're a musician, if you're a whatever, anything having to do with the arts, you know, you have to keep going. That's the part of it. And you tweak things and you try to figure it out and you test it, you know, in front of people. And you know, for me, it's always interesting to see, like, I'll write some comedies and I'm watching with, you know, in the back quietly while people are watching it. And then people laugh at different parts.
Yeah.
I'm like, I guess that is funny, but it wasn't when I was writing it, I didn't think it was going to be funny, but that part seems to be funnier than the part I wrote that was supposed to be funny. You know,
right.
That feedback, you know, is priceless, you know, and you can make those necessary changes.
That's kind of a fun thing too, is when you're watching with an audience and they find things that were funny that you're like, I didn't know it was going to be acted that way. I really didn't. Right? But you know, it's like, and I know that you guys are both musicians in Georgia, you know, and to kind of go back on that point too, is that I did play the violin from when I was young, you know, so that commitment, right? And I stopped, you know, in high school, but that commitment, you see it gets better, right?
Yes.
Right? So at a young age, I saw, you know, things get better. And so I figured the same thing would be in filmmaking or in editing your film. The more you're going to edit your film, probably the better it's going to get. Yeah. Right. If you're getting some good feedback occasionally, hopefully. Yeah. Right. And it did, it got to the point where we didn't get into any festivals to where, I kept editing a couple more years and then we got into a bunch of festivals and we won awards. So it really is the same kind of thing, in my opinion, like with learning music or an instrument or in making a song.
Yeah,
right? Exactly.
Perfecting it. Yeah.
And I love the fact that, you know, that this is something that really could be utilized by young filmmakers, musicians, because one of the things that concerns me a little bit, I have two kids and, you know, the eighth place trophies and kind of things like that, where if you had gotten in because everyone got in,
right,
you know, would you have gone, you wouldn't have, your film would have stayed what it was because everyone loved it because everyone said it was great and I got a ribbon and all that. But, you know, sometimes in life you need someone to tell you this is good, but it needs that. Or this is not good and it needs that.
You know? Such a great point. You know, obviously I went a lot of years without getting any trophies and anything, you know what I mean? And like, I have trophies all the way through. I have one trophy. And I'd be like, so I was really old by the time I had my first trophy, really old, right? Because you're supposed to get them in low league or this or that. I didn't get, you know? And so anyways, I told John Jacobs, the bad guy, and I said, hey, John, you know, because he was asking me my aspirations. I said, my aspirations is to just complete the film and, you know, hopefully it gets into a festival, you know. And I said, because, you know, it's made for under $100,000, much less than that, you know.
Right.
And I said, and, you know, our crew is full of community college students, you know. And then he told me, he says, you know, because he had directed a bunch of films and he had acted in a bunch of films and he had always acted in films he directed. He goes, I'll tell you one thing right now, is that when everyone is in the seats and they're watching your movie or they're going to be watching your movie at home, no one's going to think, oh, well, it's a little movie made without much of a budget and it's all community college students who are learning. No, they're going to think you wasted an hour and a half of my time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, well, I don't know if that's true. He goes, William, I've been through it. Okay. And so it elevated my game again. Cause I'm like, well, Stacy's right. Okay. Yeah. Well, we better then in this scene here, what we really should do, you know, if we're really going all out, we need to do this, this, and this, and this, you know?
Yeah.
And so it did help.
Wow.
There's a little bit of inspirations, right?
Yeah.
It did help because I'm like, well, if that's the case, then let's take another hour and redo this and this and this. Let's do this, you know? Yeah. So,
yeah, I mean, really at the end of the day, right? I mean, we're entertainers.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, we want to change the world and we are in our own ways, you know, in little ways we are changing the world, right? By putting in art and creating and getting people to think and to have different viewpoints. But at the end of the day, people want to leave the theater and go, wow, that was fun. Who wants tacos, right? Because that's the extent of it sometimes, unfortunately, right? And sometimes they'll go back and say, you should watch that film. Yeah. That's another thing, you know, but we are entertainers. And so sometimes, you know, we want to, like, I've been guilty of, like, having scenes that are too long because I just love the way it looks. But then you realize, well, there's nothing happening there. it is great. Great camera work. Everything was fantastic. But, you know, it needs to be chopped. And sometimes it hurts a little bit.
Yeah,
especially if you're chopping dialogue from someone or even cutting out someone. That's really hard, you know. But it is part of the process.
Yeah. And you always have that other cut, you know. But now that I made the cut that worked, right, I don't even want to see the other cut, to be honest, again.
Right.
It's really weird, you know?
Right.
And you're like, how can the film work? Because there's certain plot points that are not discussed or explained visually if we cut these 15 minutes out. And then it was interesting, like John Cappadocci and John Jacobs both kind of said to me, you know, sometimes, William, it's about the journey and the ride. If the audience is having a good time, they might think on their own, well, this and this happened. Right. So maybe this and this and this happened too, right?
Right.
It's more important for them to have a fun journey than to say, well, this and this happened, therefore you have to go to here to get to here to get to here, right, and then lay out those scenes. Right. Just take them out because they're not working, yeah, right? Some, good yes. scenes, but they're slowing down the movie.
100%.
And then the weirdest yeah. thing is nobody ever asked me like about that. They just assumed.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Oh, this must have happened, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
and so that was an interesting process for me, and a great process.
Yeah, because I think we over-explain it sometimes, right? Sometimes, I mean, in our head, we know that this is what's happening. Yeah. We know the whole story.
Yes.
Right, and we think, well, they need, but people are smart, and I think we have to give the audience, especially people who watch movies now. We've been watching films now for a long time, so they have some education in their own heads of piecing things together. That's a little challenging as a filmmaker because you know now that, okay, I have this scene here where the guy goes in and buys a cigarette and passes by this person that he's going to see later on. I don't really need that because I'll just have him buy the cigarettes.
That's a good point. You know what I realized too is I had my parents watching this film, but they don't watch a lot of films anymore, right? Mm-hmm. They don't watch contemporary films. And so my film was kind of written more of like a noir thriller, but also influenced of kind of like the contemporary storylines, right? Mm. So they were more confused by the story, but then I noticed people that watched a lot of films were not.
Right.
And you can't appease everybody, right?
Exactly.
So you can try to hit that very fine line the best you can go, but some people are still going to be confused. And then the people that I noticed is that got everything were people that watched a lot of films, right? Got it all because they're watching films nonstop. They're watching 2-3 films a day.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
They knew, right? Yeah. And then my parents were like, okay, so that makes a lot of sense. I didn't know that. And I was like, well, it was kind of like in this other scene, but yeah.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, we gotta make films for film viewers, for film lovers, and for people who watch films a lot. And then there's that fine line where people who don't go to films much, you can bring them along.
Yeah.
But they might struggle a little.
Yeah.
They'll get there. But really, you want to get the films for those that are interested in watching films.
And hopefully they are. Right. Yeah. Like this one here, I just realized she's on the screen. Yeah. My co-pilot. Yeah.
I love it.
I can see her name, although she break up. But yes.
I love it. So I want to actually, we want to talk more about, I always talk about the process, you know, because it, to me is that side of it is really real to me. As far as our audience and you know, filmmakers, someone is home right now, a filmmaker out there, or not even a filmmaker, somebody who just has an idea for a story. Mm. What do you recommend is one of the first things that they do besides just writing it?
Okay. Well, so if they're a filmmaker and they have a story that they want to tell.
Let's just say someone has a story that they want to tell, but they're not necessarily filmmakers. Because during the pandemic, one of the things that really occurred, you know, music sales went up. A lot of people bought guitars because they were home. A lot of films got watched. And during the process, a lot of people were interested. You know, I think I'd like to make a film. And people started writing. And then all these film festivals, online festivals came up, right?
Right.
I think it was just a lot of people that were at home and always had it in the back of their mind, you know. And I always think that it's much best to have much best. Is that terrible?
It's good enough.
It works, John.
Can we just go with that? I think it's much best if they if people just create art and create films. And if you have a story to tell, do it. You know, I always say write down a synopsis or write down something and then try to figure out how you're going to shoot it.
Now I noticed like on my film crew, they were figuring out problems, right? Technical problems on their phone, just going straight to YouTube, right?
Interesting.
I kind of like the old school because my parents were both teachers, right? My dad was an art teacher. So I learned a lot of the art process and the artist's way through him.
Awesome.
But I do like to be, me personally, like to be in the class. So like in screenwriting, I wanted to see a class. I wanted to know the first act, second act, third act structure. I didn't want to get lost in the second act, which happens in a lot of student films or indie films or big films even, you know?
Right.
I didn't want to get lost in the second act, and I wanted to learn filmmaking through a class. But after I took those classes, then it's not, they didn't really have like the next level. So then I'm just sitting there scrolling through YouTube, trying to like learn the next level, right?
Yeah.
And learn stuff about what to implement into a character, right? Development and have the character arc or have that character not have that arc, right? And how it can weave into the script. So yeah, I think personally, if you have a story that you want to tell, right? I don't think it's nice if it's a story that you want to tell that everyone wants to see, but I think it's more important that it's a passionate story. Yeah. To tell, because there's probably nothing worse than writing something that you're not really interested in.
Exactly.
And then and then having a structure. Like I did a music video last year, and the artist was on an album that was nominated for a Grammy. And even in that, I found myself saying, okay, this is the first act, and then we have to have the second act where she goes on this journey on her tours, right, in the video, where she's going to, you know, LA to New York to Africa, and she's going to these different places on her tour. And then the third act will sum it up back here. So I didn't think of that, like planning it out like that necessarily, but I just kind of like, I think we need a first, second, and third act in this music video. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I think it played better that way. Yeah, so even in a music video, I think a first, second, and third act is necessary, because In the scripts that I write, they really go, you know, they go rogue anyways, right? So that structure, right, that I rely on. And having done my first film where people are like, you know, your film went way off here and then it goes way off here, you know, you should have had a structure. I'm like, well, I did have a first act, second act, and third act. It's just, you know, I went off from it, right? So I personally feel the first act, second act, third act structure, which I studied on YouTube videos. I studied, I watched, you know, people talking, for everybody, you know, all these filmmakers talking. I read books on it. And second act journeys are important, because if you're always looking for Angela in the first, second, and third act, and you're always looking for Angela, it gets really, really old. So what happens is, you know, in the first act, you have that lock-in at 30 minutes. If it's a 90-minute film, you have that lock. 15 minutes, you have your inciting incident, and then 30 minutes, you have that lock-in. And then you start in on the second act journey, which is like, you know, a surprise, you know. And I felt like, you know, my movie would really be suffering, you know, if I didn't have those things. So that's what I would suggest, to actually follow the structure. And then you can go rogue if you want, but try to do an outline. I mean, I did an outline. I just was looking at this because I was, this was a quick outline I did of a TV pilot, right? I don't know if you can see it, whatever, but. You know, this was like the very first outline I did. It was a first act, second act, third act, right, of an outline. And then, you know, and then, of course, it kind of goes off on its own. Right. But I kind of felt that would be necessary in writing a story, and it's going to help you. And then the script is its own entity. Then the filming process and directing is its own entity. And the directing is a completely another film. I mean, the editing is a completely another film.
Right.
And if you wrote it yourself, then you don't have to worry, because really all you have to do is just make it work.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
But what was up here, try to see if you can put it.
Yeah. Because some things that were in the script that I felt worked and people liked, it didn't work by the time I was editing.
Interesting.
So what I did was I took those parts out that actually worked when you're reading the script. It was kind of like a surprise to me. Yeah. So it's like its own movie, really, the editing. So those three parts are different, like almost own movies, like your script, then the filming.
Yeah.
It's like you're filming three different movies almost.
And also YouTube, I mean, it's really an educational tool.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, how fortunate, you know, are we to have the
yes
tool that we can go there anytime and just, you know,
yes,
pretty much anything that you want to figure out.
I loved watching your videos where you're interviewing like William B. Davis and Dee Dee Pfeiffer. Yeah. I mean, that was like, those are like heartfelt, you know, her interview too. It's like heartfelt interview. I was just like, wow.
Yeah. And it's also fun because people, when they're researching, you know, Dee Dee Pfeiffer or the show that she's on right now on Netflix and stuff, you know, that video pops up and then you can see and it really promotes her and the show. And, but yeah, YouTube is amazing. We're at 54 minutes.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. That happens. It happens every week. It happens to us when we're having a good time. But you mentioned the music video. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because that's awesome.
Well, it was for this song called We're All the Same. Mm-hmm. And the musician is Snook Nook. She's a children's artist. Mm-hmm. And she actually also acted in my film. And so last year she asked me to direct that music video. So that was kind of fun. And so it was on an album that was nominated for a Grammy, a children's album nominated for a Grammy.
Wow.
And we won some awards for that one. It was kind of fun. That was
great.
And what's nice about that is the turnaround's really fast. You know what I mean? As opposed to years and years, 5-6 years doing a feature film, trying to make the story work. It's like the music video, the turnaround's really fast. You're down there shooting 2 days and then for the majority of it, and then you know the editing, you might edit it in a week, and you're like, I think it's already done.
I know.
Yeah,
I've done a few music videos, and you feel like, am I missing something?
Right.
You know, and part of it is because the music is already completed, so they're lip syncing, and you have the playback, and all you're doing is capturing images. So there's a lot of things that you don't have to worry about.
That's right.
Like capturing sound.
That's right.
Which is like a huge thing. If your sound is off, your movie is done, right?
Yes.
So music videos are awesome. But that's so awesome. Congratulations on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I would think that you would be very good at doing music videos, being a musician and having that ear for it too.
I've done a few of them and they're fun. They're fun. They're fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. They are fun.
Yeah. You're not really writing a script story of like pages or something.
But you know, music, and probably for you too. But music for me, like when I hear music in Georgia, we've talked about this on the show before. I get images with music. Like I can close my eyes and hear a song and almost see what music video would fit to that.
Yes. You know,
if I had the budget, I can make a music video off of any song I've ever heard in my entire life. just make that because I see something there. So
yeah.
When an artist will give me a song, you know, I've had about three or four of them that I did, I'll just listen to them and I'll say, okay, you know, this should be this, you know, and I'll paint a picture for them, you know, and I'll show them what, even though they had a different idea, I'll show them, well, this is what I see. And by the end of it, they're like, oh, I love that idea. Yeah, let's do that, you know, and it's something that I see. And so I do love that process as well. But back to you, sir.
Okay.
I want to actually ask you, like, your film now is on Amazon Prime.
Yes.
So anybody can actually check it out right there now.
Yes. I'm
gonna show your website here or the website for the film as well.
Yes.
And so please, everyone, check out the film. It's on Amazon Prime. Go to the website.
Absolutely.
William, we're wrapping up a little bit here. We actually sometimes go even longer. So, but we want to just let you know that we really are so grateful that you took the time to spend with us and stuff. Any last advice you want to actually give to us? I want to
throw out a shout out to the Seattle Film Festival, which is actually theseattlefilmfestival.com. And I'm going to be a co-director of the festival this year. And I was last year also.
Nice.
Last year also. So it's going to kind of be exciting. And it's kind of like exactly what we've been talking about. And championing indie films and filmmakers. Some of them are, you know, some of them have won huge awards. Like we had Mark Polish, who won an Indie Spirit Award, and he had his film Murmur. And then we had and some of them are just local filmmakers from Seattle doing their very first film. And so it was like, it was a great experience. I love that experience. So I'm excited that I'm going to be able to do it this year too.
That's so great. And I can't think of anybody better to actually do that and really to encourage other artists and other filmmakers to get out there and make it happen. Because you did make it happen. and you're definitely an inspiration. So we really appreciate the time, and we hope you come back again.
Appreciate you guys. I appreciate you guys, and I love your videos. I love watching your.
Thank you.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
We really appreciate that. We'll definitely be in touch. We'll be sharing this video here, this interview. We'll be sharing your film. We'll be watching it. We'll be promoting it. So we're friends for life, as we tell our guests.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Take care.
Have a good night.
You too.
That
nice
is the dude.
Yes, absolutely. Right? What a great conversation, right? What
that
a
is to do, man. And, you know, I always like, because we're at an hour, and I always feel like, you know, can you stay another hour?
You know, because there's so much more you can get into. It's incredible.
Well, that's the thing. Really... And yeah, and because it's such a big industry, we could have talked about just approaching a character. Yes. We could have talked about approaching a scene. We could have talked about getting your film into festivals. What's the best, you know, all that process. And, there's so many things, you know, but definitely we'll, you know, hopefully he'll come back, and he had a good time tonight, and we loved having him on. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in. We appreciate y'all. We will see you again next week, 7 p.m. Tuesday. And next week, I think we're doing it's Valentine's Day.
Ah.
So we're gonna be doing our
love songs.
We're gonna be doing love songs, the best love songs of all time. We're gonna be having a lot of fun. We're kind of structuring it now. Next couple of days, we'll put out some stuff. But I hope you can tune in for that. And thank you everybody for tuning in. We appreciate. We love you. We thank you for the messages and everything. It's been really, really a pleasure to be here and to do this for you guys, George, as always. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
And we will see you all next week. Take care. And as always, peace.
Peace.